thank you so much for coming. My name is Edith Young, and just a quick, since this is a lot of your first time, so I actually started this group about a year and a half, and my story is I spent about 10 years in Silicon Valley and in the tech world, and about 2 years ago, I thought to myself, other than sitting in this cubicle, there's something more meaningful for me to do. So I quit my job and wanted to start a business, and in the process of it, I realized, wow, being in corporate and now dealing with like a startup mode and really meet people is hard. Like, where would I go and meet all these people? So I actually started this meetup about a year and a half ago, adopted, this group actually started in 2002. And when I took over, the first meetup was five people. And I was sitting in this room and my five of my friends were like, oh, you can do it. And the largest meetup, which is October, was BizTech Day, and we have a little bit over 500 people. So I'm very, very thankful that all of you guys here to really is have nothing to do with me. It's really have everything to do with you. And for me, I work from home, and I know like a lot of times you sit at home and you're thinking, man, am I just like crazy dreaming of all these like weird ideas? And I can tell you, you're not crazy. All of us are crazy people here. So this is your crowd. And I think in the email I mentioned, bring tons of business cards. The reason why we're here is really to support each other. That's the, in the entrepreneur community, we definitely, especially in this area, there's tons of us. But at the same time, we are really onto our thing. So a lot of time, we don't necessarily get to meet each other. So a couple of things that we started doing tonight. First thing is, if you guys didn't do it, make sure that the little Sharpie outside, other than your name, put down what you're looking for. Even though you have so much thing that you're trying to do, but on a certain week, maybe you're looking for a partner, maybe you're looking for funding, maybe you're looking for a marketing idea, write it down, talk to people. Because all of us, actually, instead of watching, I don't know what show is on, we are actually taking time to, so don't be shy, meet everyone. And also, what we started doing outside, where the drinking area, and by the way, I'm planning to stay here at least till 10 o'clock and grab a couple of drinks of you guys. So make sure that you actually put down what you're looking for outside on the board. So even after you leave this meetup, you can still, put down, let's say, Hazel is looking for people who want to learn more about social media and social networking. And, talk to her. And she will put down her name and also her contact information out there so you can actually follow with each other afterwards. So there's a whole bunch of other things going on. Let me think about this. So some of you guys, everyone have an agenda and also a piece of paper about BizTech. If you do, can you wave? Okay, you do. Thank you. So BizTech Day, which for how many of you actually were at BizTech last year in October? Oh, well, okay, good number. So if you guys like it, make some noise. Okay. So BizTech was the idea of BizTech started in July. And last year when we were doing all these meetup and I was talking to Gary Marshall, who is sitting right there from the SBA, and as I was teaching more and more, Gary was like, you know what, we really need to do something about this, like teaching small business owners about technology and how we can leverage these technology to actually grow their business, to start businesses. And Gary has been very, very supportive with what I've been doing. And within 3 months, from nothing, we have 500 people together. It's just an amazing endeavor. And this year, there's a couple of things that is really, really cool happening in the last 3 weeks. I want to kind of update you guys. So first off, Comcast had decided to be our presenting sponsor. Woohoo! So what that means is we're definitely having it in October 22nd, 23rd. And the cool thing is that they are supporting us, putting us on TV, and there's a lot of, like, many, many great speakers. I just have a conversation with Skype this morning, and they are flying somebody in London to come to BizTech this year to actually talk about how Skype is supporting small business. So I personally use Skype, and I do all my conference call on Skype, and it's practically free. So they're actually very supportive. And another thing that is crazy is that in the last 2 weeks, I've been traveling in Asia. And when I was in Shanghai and Hong Kong, there's an entrepreneur all over the world. And they say, hey, you know what? We are very interested in BizTech. Why don't we actually do some like live streaming? So with the help of Skype, we will be live streaming BizTech content worldwide in about 10 cities right now. So that's about the organizers that have signed up so far. But this will be a worldwide event, and it's going to be very, very amazing. And we'd love for all of you guys to suggest topics and speakers and anything that is really for you guys. So if there's anything that you guys want to learn, please make sure that we do have a Facebook page with Hazel Gray's help that we set up. We want you guys to tell us what it is that you want to learn, and we will bring those people here and bring expert. And I know like Gary will be involved, and I know Hazel will be involved, and Mark, we will talk soon. And you know, we just really, really want to get you guys' input as much as we can. So without further ado, I actually want to invite three of our amazing speakers. Come on up and have a seat. So the style that we're going to run it tonight is each of them, pick any seat you want. So each of them will first do a 7-minute presentation on their specific topic. And what we're going to do is actually flip over. We're going to start with Gary, and then Mark, and then Hazel. And they will actually show what they get in terms of their on-the-cheap tips. And after that, we will start an Q&A. So I encourage everyone, those of you actually have any specific questions, and we can basically have a conversation. That's what we're doing. One thing before I forget is I know there's tons of on the cheap, how to run your business on the cheap idea out there. So if there's any additional ideas that our speakers or our panel didn't address, tonight after our program, starting about 8:30 or so, stick around, because we will basically let you have the mic, each person for 90 seconds, if you want to kind of talk. Is just to share ideas so we can actually put you on tape. There's more ideas that, you know, we'll put it on YouTube if that's okay with you guys, so you guys can just watch it and really just make a lot of notes and share with everyone. So without further ado, so I first want to introduce Gary.
Thanks, Edith.
Hey.
Hey. So Gary is the CEO of Odesk, and Gary and I actually met, I think, about a month and a half ago, and I saw him spoke at one of the geek session, I think, and I thought he was amazing in terms of talking about outsourcing, and that's why he is here tonight.
You're supposed to set low expectations, Edith. You don't want to, geez.
So Odesk is the marketplace for online work teams with the best business model for both buyers and providers. For buyers, guarantee work, every hour billed is an hour worked, and for providers, guarantee payment, every hour worked is an hour pay. I'll let you explain to us more.
Good.
Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, Edith. I'm thrilled to be here, and I actually already got my money's worth out in the lobby, so I think the networking alone has been fantastic, so congratulations on a great event already. As Edith said, she's here for you, I'm here for you as well. I want to make sure you get value out of the session. I think I'm uniquely qualified to talk about it, one, because I was an early team member at a company called Pure Software. I worked for a gentleman by the name of Reed Hastings, who's now the CEO of Netflix. And Pure was acquired by a company, Rational. Rational was acquired by IBM. And I thought it would be a good idea to stay at IBM as opposed to be employee number three at Netflix. So a good friend of mine says experience is what you get when you don't get all the other things you want. And so I have a lot of experience. I left IBM, went to a little startup called IntelliBank. IntelliBank was ahead of its time. We had great technology. We failed to raise money. We ran out of money. And so there were, again, just tremendous experience gained there. I'm going to talk about some of those lessons learned. And now I'm the CEO of Odesk. And what's great about Odesk is I think we've taken a lot of my experience and things that we've learned, and I want to share some of that with you tonight. So, perfect. Thank you very much. What is Odesk? What makes us unique? What's different today? And 5 ways to run your business on the cheap. This is really the meat of the presentation, these 5 tips, and I'm going to talk about each one. There may be some overlap with some of the other panelists, but hopefully they'll thank me for setting them up for the kill. Bump, set, spike. So Odesk, as Edith mentioned, we're a marketplace for online work teams. What does this mean? Companies come to Odesk to hire, manage, and pay remote talent. Hard to get access to people. Why not open your horizons to people outside of your local geography? Remote work is a great way to work, really cost effectively. Then what we do is we create tools to help manage those remote workers as if they were in your same office. We're 25 employees. We eat our own steak. We have 43 full-time equivalents that work for Odesk from around the world. Developers in Eastern Europe, QA, QA manager in New York, a stay-at-home mom in Tennessee who manages our support team in the Philippines, 17 marketers that come to work at Odesk every day. We've never met any of them face-to-face. So we're leveraging the global talent pool to build, run, deploy, and manage our service. We're funded by some fine VC firms. We've raised $29 million. As of this morning, we had 16 of that in the bank. So we're really cash efficient, and we're growing quite aggressively. $68 million in services performed, and a little bit more about just our metrics and statistics. So we're doing real work on our platform. Companies are coming to us to hire people for the long term. What makes us unique, once you hire a resource, you manage them as if they were in your office. So in order for me to get paid, I'm working for any of you, I have to log into your team room, and then you have presence, you can see I'm working. We give you a screenshot of my desktop 6 times an hour at random intervals, guaranteeing that I'm really working for you, right? And then we can guarantee payment to the provider. We can prove that I really was working, it's fully auditable, and then we take the risk of collecting the money. Enough about Odesk. So what's different today? As I said earlier, I've had experience in enterprise software. Our last startup was web, it wasn't even web 1.0, it was like web 0.5, right? I mean, it was we were ahead of our time. But I was looking at some of the things that we had then. These are things that we had at IBM and at Rational Software and at Pure Software. And today, this is what you have on the right-hand side of the slide. So it's about leveraging the organization outside of your company. It's about getting things done for less. It's about flexibility, moving faster, no silos. And the world has really changed. If you look at startups today relative to even 2000, companies are doing things incredibly differently, right? You're not hiring dozens of engineers in San Jose. Why? Because you can't afford to. You've got to leverage people in other parts of the world. You've got to leverage free technology. You've got to do things differently. So this is what we do to run our business on the cheap. Hopefully there's some lessons in here for you. One is use free or low-cost tools. We 3 years ago at Odesk, we had Exchange. We were using Microsoft for mail. We switched to Gmail. I was the last holdout. I was too comfortable with my client, and I love it now, right? And it's practically free. It's $50 per user per year. It works for the global team. We've got wikis. We've got documents. We're doing everything. We absolutely love it. You can see, as Edith mentioned earlier, Skype. We have two Radio Shack microphones in our conference room, right, with a jack, and we have two cheap speakers. Any conference call, you plug both of those in, and it's as clear as day, and it's free, right? And so we can run a worldwide engineering meeting with people all over the globe with, you know, $60 of Radio Shack hardware and free Skype. So my point on this slide is that free or better, right? When you're starting your company, you don't have to go out and invest in a robust configuration management system. Subversion is fantastic for startups, right? And there's even companies out there that will host it for you for minimal cost. I see a lot of people scribbling notes. Edith, if you don't provide these slides, I'm happy to. So you can ask for my card, or I'm G-Sword at Odesk. I'm happy to send these slides to anybody. But we love all these things on this slide and even more. The second lesson learned and the thing that we do to run our business on the cheap is we avoid high-cost marketing. And I apologize if there's any marketing firms in the audience. I'm going to assume that they're not high-cost marketing firms. But, you know, SEM is a pretty cool thing. You pay a dollar, you get $5 back. The problem is you wake up one day and you realize you're spending $5, right? And you better make sure you're getting $5 back. And one of our investors, or actually not our investor, but a partner at Benchmark, says SEM is like crack. And I'm sure it's not from firsthand experience. I'm sure it's what he assumes crack is like. But it's, you get addicted to it, and then you're paying for that buzz of SEM. And SEO is like free beer, right? And you're drinking your free beer, and you're wondering when somebody's going to come in and say the beer's not free anymore. You have to pay for it. So the SEO has been fantastic for us. Where we used to get 60% of our traffic was paid, it's completely reversed, and now 80% of it is free. Right, and I can tell you, free is better than paying for it. And so we've been able to reduce our acquisition costs by being smart about SEO and being smart about social media optimization, which I'm sure Hazel's going to talk about, so I'll leave that for you. The second bullet here is make your product easier to buy. It's got to be easy to buy, right? Products that are bought, not sold, it's so much better. And the way you get your products bought, not sold, is create a product that people really need, make it user-friendly, and make sure that you're solving one problem really well. I'll talk about that on another slide. And then you've got to leverage your customers to get the word out, and you've got to do whatever you can to promote your brand, right? Speak at events, especially good ones like this, right? And so you really want to avoid high-cost marketing. The third thing that we do is leverage the extended enterprise. What do I mean by this? Well, you know, I think eBay did an exceptional job of this, and we learned this from employee number 3 at eBay, Mary Lou Song, who's one of our advisors. And Mary Lou said that they didn't know what to do at eBay early on. They would go to their community and say, what do you think we should do? And the community would tell them. They would say, we think you should do this. And they started listening to the community, and that's how they developed their product, right? And they had the benefit of not knowing what to do, but they had so many users that could help guide them. And if you don't create a mechanism to get that feedback, you're not going to be able to do it. So you really want to use your customers to help build your product. We started a community, and our community helps us to support our product. Like, a lot of times we don't even have to answer a thread in the community. The community will do it for us, right? And then we go and we hire those people to be our support reps, again, working for us remotely, eating our own steak. And so we've been able to grow our business by creating an ecosystem around us and really leveraging that for product development, product support, product management, et cetera. And then, of course, the APIs. There's just a lot of great anecdotes here, but creating a platform that's open, who's done a better job than that than the iPhone, right? And so creating the platform, enabling people to build on top of what you're doing and give them an opportunity to make money will help you to promote your brand and get it out there. The fourth thing is a little bit self-serving, but it's hire the right resources the right way. My last company, IntelliBank, the one where we ran out of money, we hired expensive salespeople, and we didn't have a repeatable sales use case. We didn't define, we had 50 customers, but it was 50 customers of 49 different flavors, right? And so it was hard to go out and sell a deal like you did the previous deal. And the lesson learned there is you really need a repeatable use case before you go out and hire salespeople. Don't hire salespeople to do your job, right? If you can't sell it, somebody else isn't going to be able to, right? And so you want to make sure that you hire the right resources the right way. And again, you know, back to what we've done, we eat our own steak. Everybody you see on this slide actually works for Odesk. Stephanie on the left is the stay-at-home mom in Tennessee that manages our support team in the Philippines. Jackie Pittenger in the upper left is a writer. Her husband works in oil and gas. She comes to work as a blogger, a marketing writer. She's rewriting our help text. She does that this week from Brazil. Her husband's in Brazil. She works from the hotel room. So she works 40 hours a week for us remotely. She's never been to Menlo Park, right? And so we've been able to tap into on-demand talent when we need it. Not that way you're not paying a salary, a W-2, benefits, and all of the carrying costs associated with it. If they turn out to be great contractors, we've had the opportunity to try before we buy, and then we can make them full-time employees. And we've done that in 3 scenarios already with Stephanie. And then the fifth bullet, you want to prioritize ruthlessly. And what do I mean by that? You know, you've got to focus on the difference that makes a difference. IntelliBank tried to be all things to all people. We were dessert topping and floor wax, right? And we found out that customers don't want to buy dessert topping and floor wax. They want one or the other. And so try and be really good at one. And the anecdote there is that IntelliBank didn't make it. We were Salesforce.com meets Documentum meets Microsoft Office all in the cloud, right, 4 years ago. And lo and behold, people didn't want that. So we tried to sell the company. We were able to sell a piece of it. And the guys that we sold a piece to took 3 of our team, and a guy by the name of Mark Schuster took it, created a company called Coral, and sold it to Salesforce.com in 9 months for $14 million. So they took one tiny sliver of our application. It was 1/5 of our functionality, and they were able to execute really, really well in 9 months, a team of 6 guys, right? And so that was my lesson in focus, right? If we were able to see that the market wanted that one thing, there was a void there, there was a market opportunity and good execution, we could have I could have been part of that. So that's really the five tips. I think there's probably 100 more. And thanks for the opportunity. I hope you got some value out of that.
Thank you, Gary. I especially love your last slide, changing how the world works.
It's a bold mission, but somebody has to do it.
Very cool. So now I'd like to introduce Mark. Thank you so much, Gary. Mark is a former CEO of Game Daily and co-founder of Worlds and Games, a strategic consulting firm focusing on games, community ads, and virtual worlds growth strategy and tactics. And Mark actually are now coaching CEOs on varied capacity. I'm actually going to let yourself to introduce yourself.
Okay. Well, thanks, Mark. Edith, thanks a lot for introducing me. First, I want to say I met Edith at an event that I was speaking at. I'm a member of a group called the Entrepreneurs Organization. And if any of you guys are entrepreneurs and have businesses that are $1 million or more in revenue, I'd definitely check out the Entrepreneurs Association's eonetwork.org. It's like group therapy for entrepreneurs. It's great. And God knows we all need it. Well, first of all, my talk's done because, Gary did such a great job, so I got nothing more to say. No, but seriously, thanks a lot for inviting me. I'm really happy to be here, and I'm just going to go through a couple things with you guys. But first, you're probably wondering, who is this guy? So I have a kind of eclectic background, as most entrepreneurs tend to have. When I was a kid, I started a bike repair service because the bike store in my town closed down. Started fixing people's bikes out of my basement. Then I decided I wanted to ride my bike somewhere far, so I left New York and rode to Seattle when I was 16 years old, and every single piece of my bike broke several times along the way, so I got really good at fixing bikes. And that was my summer job and my winter job, fixing bikes out of my mother's basement. And I realized that I wasn't going to be successful sitting in the basement of, the card store putting prices on Smurfs, which I did when I was a little bit younger. So after college, I got an opportunity to go to Sweden, of all places. And people said, why did you go to Sweden? And I'll just tell you, it wasn't for the weather. But in any case, I ended up in Sweden after college, and I lived in a student dorm. And there were all these people like, gosh, I miss America, and we've been there, and I can't get Levi's, and I can't get peanut butter, and I can't get chocolate chip cookies. And I was like, what? You can't get chocolate chip cookies? That's outrageous. How can that be the case? So I asked my mom to send me over some chocolate chips, and I made some chocolate chip cookies on the dorm, and people loved them. And I was like, this has got to be the biggest no-brainer since mankind. I mean, how can a country not have chocolate chip cookies, I want to be the Henry Ford of chocolate chip cookies. So I went down to the Central Park there, made some cookies, handed them out, and that's kind of not really a great representation. But in the middle, you see the front page of the Wall Street Journal and the little blow-up called Swedish Sweet Tooth. So one night, I'm on a bus coming home. There's another American guy sitting next to me, and we're coming back from a bar, and we start talking. He's like, what are you doing here? I'm like, oh, it's a long story, but I'm going to start a chain of cookie stores. And he goes, really? Wow, that's pretty cool. Tell me about it. So I told him a little bit about me. Then he handed me his card. He goes, hi, I'm Marcus Broccoli. I'm the Stockholm correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. Do you want to slide something under my door? And this was the late 80s, so there was no email. It was slide a paper, send a curly fax. So I did that. And then a week later, my dad calls me from New York. He goes, hey, Mark, you're on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. I'm like, what? So I went down to the Central Station. I'm like, hey, guys, I'll bet you that you're going to give me all those copies of the Wall Street Journal for free. The guy's like, yeah, right. I'm like, what if I'm on the front page? He goes, yeah, then I'll give it to you for free. And I'm like, look, buddy. So I got them all for free. So long story short, I started Sweden's first chain of cookie stores. Kind of long, crazy story. Thanks to me, the Swedish women are now a little chubbier than they were before I got there.
And he's not kidding.
Not kidding. And my wife's a brunette, so she's like, date the blonde, marry the brunette. So she's really happy about that. And so that was a really great experience. I did that for several years. I'll tell you a little story about that in a minute. Then I sold that business, and I got recruited by Philips to run a division of theirs that did voice response services and interactive TV. Technology, I knew nothing about it. They wanted someone with entrepreneurial experience and spoke English. My English was pretty good, and so I think that's why I got the job. So luckily there was a guy there who taught me about voice response services, IVR. A lot of you probably know about that. At the time, those were all monetized via 900 numbers. And that was a great business until someone decided to put certain types of services on 900 numbers. So that kind of crimped our business after a couple of years. But in the meantime, I turned that company around, and we went from number 14 in Europe in the division to number 2. And at that point, I came back to the United States, got a job at a business-to-business networking company called Reach Networks, and we built business-to-business networks for like Price Waterhouse, Coopers & Lybrand, CMP. And the founder of that company was a really sharp Swiss guy, and he came up with a really cool piece of technology that was really the first iteration of push technology. Those of you out there who are old enough to remember stuff like, you know, Pointcast or that sort of thing, we started a company called VCast, and we were the first guys delivering large stuff on the internet. And we were working for all these publishers. We couldn't figure out how to get paid. And again, this is 1995, and you know, not a whole lot's changed on the internet, right? So, but it was a great service, and but we just couldn't really figure out a business model. So we ended up selling that company to Verizon. Some of you may see VCast floating around now. That was ours. And then we started something called GigX, and we became the world's largest deliverer of game demos on the internet. And that's kind of a different story. We ran into a problem after a couple years because all of a sudden something called peer-to-peer came out, and all of a sudden downloading was free. So all our clients who were paying us lots of money didn't want to pay us money anymore. We're like, we have a problem. So what do we do? So I'm a big fan of learning, like I guess a lot of you people are, and I took my team to an event hosted by Jim Collins out in Boulder, and I said, your homework is all to read Good to Great. And we all read Good to Great. We got out there and we're like, what is it that we're really all about? What's our hedgehog? What can we be the best at the world at, really have leverage on, and really be passionate about? And we figured out we were delivering game demos to all these gamers who like games. We had created distribution deals with Yahoo, with Microsoft, all these different sites. And we're like, we're really an advertising company. We're turning the ship. So we built an advertising company during the nuclear winter of the internet in 2000. And we built that. I acquired a couple of companies. One of them was a little business-to-business newsletter, kind of like your point there, that a competitor wasn't really monetizing. It was called Game Daily. And we built that into the internet's third largest gaming portal, both business-to-business and consumer. And now that's a part of AOL. So that's AOL Time Warner's business gaming and business thing. So talking about cookies. Yes, that is me. And so, you know, one of the things, Edith saw a talk I gave for EO called 10 Tools to Grow Your Bottom Line in 60 Days. She said there are three things I really like. Okay, talk about these three things. So she said, talk about selling more stuff. What does it mean to sell more stuff? Well, I started a chain of cookie stores, and I thought my business was selling cookies in cookie stores. And it was. But really what people wanted when they came to Mark's Cookies, the shy guy that I was, naming it Mark's Cookies. It's now called American Cookies, by the way. The guy didn't like the name, so changed it. But in any case, what we were really selling was a fantasy. We were selling an experience for people to come to that store and take a virtual trip to the United States, to feel like they were back home, to have real chocolate chip cookies made with imported chocolate chips and all the right ingredients. And people loved coming there. Really, in essence, if it were today, it would be a social network. It was an American social network incarnate. But the problem was, when we had weather like we had the last couple days, it was really hot, guess what? No one would go into a shopping mall. They'd rather be outside. So we hoped it rained all summer. And it was in Sweden, so half the time it did, so that was good. But when it didn't rain, we were sitting here with the same costs and the same overhead, selling a heck of a lot less stuff. So I figured, how can we sell more stuff and leverage what we have? So I went over to the Hard Rock Cafe, talk to the guys over there and convince them to buy cookies and muffins and brownies and start selling them with their meals. And they started to do that. We're like, wow, that's cool. That's a little bit of wholesaling business. We can make sure we sell some more stuff even when we're not in our store. And then I got an opportunity to meet a guy who was a chef, and he was Swedish. I guess he was the Swedish chef. And he worked for SAS Airlines, the biggest airline out of Scandinavia. And we were talking. I said, you know, in America, people eat muffins in the morning. What about here in Sweden? He said, no, what's that? I'm like, okay. And I gave him some blueberry muffins. He said, these are really good. Could you come out and show us how to make blueberry muffins? I'm like, sure. So I came out with a muffin tray, some muffin mix, and it was me and like four of these guys with the hats on out at the industrial kitchen at Arlanda Airport in Stockholm. And I showed them how to make blueberry muffins. And they liked them so much that they were like, we want to put these on our flights. could we order muffins from you? And I'm like, yeah, I guess so. Like, how is that going to work? You know, I bake muffins in Stockholm. How am I going to get a 50 miles to Arlanda? I'm like, oh, yeah, I make my own muffin mix in the United States and import it so I can mix it up and sell it in a store. What if I sent the whole bag of muffin mix to the airport? And I didn't have an employee in the way. And I didn't have any manufacturing costs. I didn't have any spillage. I could wholesale that stuff. And since I brought in by the container load, guess what? I was selling a lot more stuff with no additional cost. So what I'd ask you to do in your business is just for a moment think about what can you do to sell more stuff. And I think if you think about it for 30 seconds, you could probably jot down one idea. So I'd just take a second and jot down an idea. Okay, so reduce your costs. Now, here's something that's kind of more practical. All of us who have rented space know that our least favorite person tends to be our landlord, right? Anyone love their landlord? No, not really. So we were subleasing an office space right down the street here on Howard Street a few years ago, paying just a crazy amount of money because this company, this dot bomb, had rented the whole building, and they decided to lease out a floor to try and save some money. So the landlord's like, and this was in 2000, right before the crash, where like you could not get space in San Francisco. I mean, just to diverge for a second, a realtor literally took me to an old Chinese laundry in Potrero Hill. They had just taken out the machines, peeling paint on the side, and looked at me in a straight face and said, $92 a square foot a year. Like, this is crazy.
I was there before you. The machines were still in that we passed.
But those of you who have been around, you know, it was crazy. So I was beyond happy to get this raw 3,000-square-foot loft on Howard Street, totally raw, and we had to do all the TIs ourselves. The guy's like, here, I'm going to let you have this place. So we put about $30,000 into it, built out offices and conference rooms and all that sort of stuff. And after about a year, you know, we were getting the economy softened a lot, obviously, and we were being offered other spaces. So I went to the landlord, and I'm like, you know, we really like your space. We've obviously invested a lot of money here, but, you know, I'm being offered a space just as big for half the price, like down the street. And I know we're under a lease, but, you know, I'm being offered something half the price. My investors don't like paying a whole lot. And the guy's like, you're under a lease. I said, that's what I said, but I don't like paying a whole lot. And I need to tell my investors what I'm going to do next week. So I walked away. And the guy calls me the next week, and he's like, Mark, you know, I've been thinking about it. You've been such a good tenant. You always pay your rent on time. Your sublease is what, for another 2 years? Another 2 years. Would $4,000 a month be okay with you? Sure, take it. So right there, we save $50,000. And everyone said, you can't save $50,000 because you have a lease. Well, I'd say, look for your biggest expenses in your business right now. Most of you who have offices, it will be your landlord, your real estate, or your employees, and figure out a way to save those expenses. You don't have to be a dick about it. You don't have to be unpleasant. But if you have that conversation, there are a lot of people out there who want to help you, who want you to succeed. And these times are pretty unprecedented, so I think people will be more flexible. Okay, get free publicity. I'm sure we're going to hear a lot about that in a minute. But something that I love doing, it's I love doing stuff that gets free publicity. So at Game Daily, we were in the video game business, and everyone thought, wow, video games are for, like, geeks, and, you know, it's all black background and scary, and, you know, no kids or women will play video games. By the way, anyone here play video games? Yeah? Okay, cool. And so our vision was, let's come up with a site that, like, your mom could relate to, your girlfriend could relate to, a little kid could relate to. So it's not like geeky and crazy, but it's accessible. So my vision was, I wanted to have the equivalent of like the back page of the New York Post that has like 30 movies on a Friday and a paragraph about each and a rating. Let's do that for video games. And people are like, you're crazy. Gamers are hardcore. No one's ever going to go mainstream in gaming. That's not going to happen. How many people here play Guitar Hero? How many here have a Wii? Cool. So bottom line is, we were right. And so we did something. We're like, we're going to do a family guide. We're going to write about games that are good for kids. And we're going to do it in a very simple fashion. So mom can come to the site.
read about these games, and print out this 20-page PDF, literally with checkboxes next to the games, and take it to the store and buy what's good for kids. So I called a buddy of mine who's really good in PR. I said, hey, David, we're doing this. Do you think we could get any traction? He goes, you know what? For $300, I'll write a release for you. I'll call a couple people, TV stations. We'll see what happens. The next week, he calls me up. He goes, Laura Garcia Cannon at NBC 11 wants to talk to you. Silicon Valley Business wants to come and interview you. Within a week, we had three TV experiences for free. And that's on my blog that Edith put out, markfriedler.blogspot.com. Those clips are there. So that was great. And the big way I think about it is that if you think about the media, everyone's like, oh, I wish I get covered. And with rare exception, with a couple of these sites, most media have a writer's block every day. And there's a lot more media today than there was a couple years ago. So all these people writing about all this stuff are dying to hear your story. And so what you have to do to make your story get covered? Show how you solve a need and how you do it today and make it a little bit fun. Really simple. And believe me, you'll get a lot of free coverage. So four more fast tools. Hire fake people. That's one of my favorite things ever. When we started out VCast, we were two guys in a loft in Soho. And this was New York. So New York's a whole different culture from Silicon Valley. People don't really respect the two guys in a loft. Like, you got to look big. So we needed to, like, look big. And we had, like, the New York Times as our client. We had, you know, CBS and Time Warner. And so we had to look big. So both my partner and I weren't very customer service oriented. So we hired Bruce Lee as our customer service rep. Of course, Bruce Lee didn't exist until late at night when we broke out the beers and started playing games in our office, started answering customer service emails. Then he existed. We got a lot of complaints. I think Bruce Lee got fired a bunch of times. But my point is, we had about five different people, and we're like, what should our head of sales be called? You know, Ricky Doe or something like that. We just came up with silly names. And it's as easy as setting up an email alias. I mean, I'm sure a lot of you guys, instead of doing info at or sales at, like, how unimaginative. Hire fake people. You can have a lot of fun with it. Okay, raise money. How many people are VCs here? Okay, good, because you'd have to cover your ears. Never raise money from VCs. Raise money from your customers. And I say this all the time to my clients. I'm like, kind of like what Gary's point was. If you can't figure out what your business is, how is anyone else going to figure out what your business is? If you can't figure out how to raise whatever money you need in 6 months from your customers, you probably shouldn't be in business. So most of the time, people are like, oh, I need to raise this much money. It's like, why do you need to raise this much money? Well, we just heard with Odesk and all these other services, you don't need infrastructure anymore. When I raised money from JP Morgan Chase in 1999, 2000, people were like raising money to buy servers. Like, we always did stuff on the cheap. We had cheap little PCs and we ran Linux on it before Linux was cool. You know, we didn't use our money for infrastructure. So again, there are just tons of ways to raise money from your customers. I had a client who was like, oh God, I need $300,000. I'm like, that's not a lot of money. How much does your service cost? Well, it's like $500,000 a year. Well, what if you cut a deal with your customer, give him a huge discount, let him be part of your premier program or your platinum group. Come up with a name. Your fake customer can take care of him. Your fake employee, rather. Okay, get some help. I mean, this is something that, you know, again, it's a little self-serving. I'm now coaching CEOs to help build their business. I have two coaches. I have a business coach and I have a personal coach. And both these guys help me with different aspects of, you know, what I do. Tiger Woods, greatest athlete on the planet, has got four coaches. If there's a guy who doesn't need a coach, it's Tiger Woods. So if it's coaching, if it's a trainer, if it's training for your employees, if it's board experts, if it's advisors, there are lots of people out there that can help you. Take advantage of that. Don't be the typical egomaniac entrepreneur. The number one thing that I'm scared of, and I say to everyone I work with, is like, I'm always scared of the things I don't know I don't know. And the number one challenge of entrepreneurs in my experience has been drawing that sandbox. Like, here's where my expertise ends. I'm not the numbers guy. I hate accounting. I don't want to do it. So I, thank God, got a great person who handles all our stuff, so I don't have to worry about it. And then finally, attend an industry event and conference. I'll tell you one final story, and then I'm done. So I was I knew these guys at AOL for a long time. A buddy of mine ran their games division, and I was supposed to be on a panel with him at a show called Digital Hollywood. So I get to Digital Hollywood, and his lieutenant was there, this kind of prickly guy who I didn't really know, and I always thought the guy was, you know, a little aloof, not really friendly. And here we are, we're sitting down in the conference ready, speaker ready room, we're talking. And, you know, I'm from New York, this guy's Puerto Rican guy, grew up in the Bronx, kind of rough and tumble, blah, blah, blah. We start talking, and I tell him that my wife's family's from the Dominican Republic, and I had to learn merengue for my wedding. And he looks at me and goes, "You're a white guy, and you dance merengue?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "I love dancing salsa. I go to the Copa all the time. I go to this place. Next time you're in New York, let's all go out and we'll go to the Copa. We'll go dancing together." I'm like, "Sure, love to." Well, guess what? 3 years later, that's the guy who bought my company. There were 10 companies AOL was looking at in the game space, and he bought mine. Did that meeting have something to do with it? Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Why? Do you work with people you don't like? Do you work with people you don't know, you don't trust? Of course not. So I think we have to pull our heads a little bit out of all this internet bullshit and think about what really matters, which is personal relationships. They still matter. And if you meet people and you trust people and you like people, it can be virtual, but you still need a relationship. And once you have a relationship, great things can happen. So trade events, I think, are beyond a doubt one of the most efficient ways to make that happen. So that's all I have to say, but thank you very much. And
thank you, Mark. And next, I'd like to introduce Hazel Grace. Hazel is the founder of SocialBee Strategy, and Hazel Grace has helped more than 50 companies leveraging social network tools and expand visibility and reach new audiences. Her latest company, SocialBees, specializes in supporting everyone from small business to starving artists in building a high-quality Facebook presence. Hazel.
Thank you, Edith.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for having me. As Edith said, I'm Hazel Grace, and I'm here to talk with you about 7 quick tips for being more awesome with social media. But before I start, I just want to say, I need you to do this for me. Thanks. I always like to start by just saying, as an entrepreneur, online or offline, you basically have 2 options. One is to make a wish and hope that you don't end up at the short end of the stick. And then the second option is to be awesome. I hope that everyone in this room will be awesome, but unfortunately what we see with a lot of businesses, large and small, on social media is that they're not always as awesome as they'd like to be. I think one of the reasons small businesses are not succeeding as much as they should on social media is this common myth that they seem to come to us with. The myth is the product that they have is not really exactly as good as it should be, or maybe the brand's not as good as it should be, but somebody has put this idea in their head that if they just put that subpar brand or crappy product up on Twitter or on Facebook, that all of a sudden it's going to go viral and everybody in the world is going to want it. That's not true. It just doesn't work that way. So make sure before you launch a social media campaign of any sort that you check your brand and you check your product and make sure that it's stellar before you spend any more money throwing bad dollars after good. Okay, now on to our tips. So I'm going to fire 7 tips at you really quick, and it's going to be like Twitter fire. All right, tip number 1. So before you launch any social media campaign, you just really need to look before you leap. If you want to have a social media campaign that's going to have any lasting impact on your business, you need to make sure that you take these 6 important steps. So make sure you find an audience find a network that's where your audience is. Don't just go after what's trendy. Your audience may not be on Twitter, and you know Facebook's not right for everybody either. So figure out where your audience is before you start planning your social media campaign. Then actually plan a campaign, plan something that's measurable so that you know whether you're successful or not by your own standards. Tip number 2, create killer content and make it really easy for people to share it. So it's great to have amazing content, but you also have to create a way that people can share it really easily without cutting and pasting a URL into their email. So you've probably seen all of these different examples shown here. But one that you maybe have not integrated into your website or blog yet is Facebook Connect. So what Facebook Connect does is it allows your website or blog to generate stories from Facebook users when they sign into your website or blog that are published on Facebook, generating a lot more awareness around your presence within the Facebook network. Okay, tip number three. This one has a lot of people scratching their heads at first, but try it out and you'll see what I mean. Use a Facebook page instead of your website or newsletter. The reason that you want to do this, it seems a little bit counterintuitive to people who love their websites, but the reason that you want to do this is because your Facebook page is viral. That's where you get the value out of Facebook. Facebook is viral. Your website and your newsletter are not viral. So you always want to send people to your Facebook page first, get them to become a fan, get them to interact there, and then push them over to your website to convert them into sales. The other thing that I want to show you guys on this slide that's really important is you can see here in this Become a Fan box, we have what's called a fan reveal code. This is a bonus tip for you guys tonight. The fan reveal code pushes people to become fans by revealing a special code or discount or maybe webinar access or something to somebody once they become a fan that's otherwise not visible to them. Tip number four. When you're creating a Facebook page, set up custom tabs for your ads. So what we've done with this particular Facebook page is we set up an ad that was targeting female dog owners of a certain demographic, and we run them through to a customized tab on the Facebook page. What this does is it pushes your dogs, your ad dollars a lot farther because you're sending that demographic to exactly where you want them to go on your page, and then you're telling them what to do. So when they come through to this specific tab, we're telling them that we have a special contest going on. And that's tip number five. You should always be running contests on your page. I run a contest at all times, and I generate a ton of free fans and free sales leads this way. So this is the contest we have going on for that specific page. And what you can see here is that people are uploading photos of their dogs. So it's a cute pooch contest. This page launched about a week ago with 60 fans, and I think as of today she's up to about 250 fans. Many of these people are generated by the viral activity. So when people upload these photos to the Facebook page, the photo generates a newsfeed story into the newsfeeds of all of their contacts with the photo and a URL to her page. So for her, that's free advertising. Really amazing targeted free advertising. When you run contests, tell people about them. Here are just a few places that you can do that. Okay, tip number six today is get flashy. Anybody here know what a flash mob is? Okay, we've got one person, I think, who knows what a flash mob is. So I'm just going to tell you guys. A flash mob is a whole bunch of people doing the same thing in the same place at the same time. This is a marketing stunt. Now, what you can do online is a virtual flash mob. This is incredibly inexpensive to do, whether you're doing it online or offline. If you're doing it online, the chances are it's free. So let me give you an example of how we could all do a flash mob. We could all tomorrow change out our online icons, our online avatars, our photos, to the Biz Tech Day banner. And that would be a flash mob for Biz Tech Day. If everybody in this room changed out their online avatars to the Biz Tech Day banner tomorrow, people would take notice. They'd want to click through, look at it, and check it out. So that's a free marketing stunt that we could all pull off tomorrow. Anyone in?
Let's do it.
All right, guys, let's do it. So we just planned a flash mob. I don't know if anybody else saw this video that was going around last week. It was really buzzing all over the internet. It was all of these kids singing and dancing to Do, Re, Mi in Antwerp, singing and dancing the same song in coordinated movements at the same time. That was a really great example of an in-person flash mob. Now, this one, as far as I know, was not done for any commercial purposes. But you could have them all wearing the t-shirt of your company, right? And you can make a video of that and post it online where it can be shared. This is also something that you can do for free. Get your friends to do it, get your contacts to do it, or check out the site flashmob.com. Now, I have to admit, full disclosure here, I have not actually tried flashmob.com, but it's probably worth experimenting with if you're thinking about doing a flash mob. It is definitely active. There are people planning flash mobs. I think there's one in Napa this weekend that's wear a yellow t-shirt and act like a chicken in town square. So it can be done. And then your final tip for the evening is make sure that you tag your content. So this is something that should be obvious, but it's not. Most small business owners are not really doing this. When you tag your content, it makes it a lot more likely that people are going to discover your content. And on Facebook now, fan pages can actually tag photos and videos of Facebook users. So what this does is it generates a highlight story to that person's context. So the way that that would work would be, for example, people are taking photos and videos tonight. If Edith posted my photo or our photo to her Facebook BizTech Day page and tagged us in it, then all of our friends would see it in their highlights. So she gets a ton of free advertising to a targeted market because birds of a feather flock together, right? Most of my friends are entrepreneurs. So she just got exposure to tons of other entrepreneurs.
700 friends, I think you have.
It's a lot, and I think half of them are entrepreneurs. Okay. And then I can't not mention the incredibly popular Twitter hashtags. So when you use Twitter hashtags, you also get a ton more exposure for yourself and therefore for the content that you're producing. Anybody ever tried Follow Friday? Okay, great. Any Twitterers here? Are you guys Twittering right now? Hashtag BizTech Day?
Yeah.
Okay, guys, hashtag BizTech Day. And then before I finish up tonight, I was just inspired by the other speakers to mention a few other really great on-the-cheap resources for boosting your SEO and also getting tons of free publicity. There are a couple of networks that everyone here should belong to. BizNick spoke at BizTech Day last year. They're an amazing resource. I Googled Facebook page development today, and I came up on the top, on the first Google page, and I have done no SEO at all because of BizNick. And Savor the Success for female entrepreneurs. They give out tons of free publicity leads, and they're launching their San Francisco chapter here next week. Yes, next Thursday. And Savor the Success for female entrepreneurs and BizNick for both. And BizNick, N-I-K. And then, of course, Harrow, helpareporter.org, is it, or .com? Peter Shankman. At Skydiver on Twitter. That's all.
Thank you, Hazel. And let's give all three of our speakers a great round of applause. So we just hear some really, really cool presentations like for the last half hour or so. So what I want to do actually ask a few questions. I think, you know, what we talk about is a lot around like marketing, publicity, outsourcing. And now I'm just going to throw in like a few other questions because all of us know that running business is not, there's so much for us to think about, right? Starting from, you know, creating your product. Actually, before I actually start this part of the Q&A, how many of you are actually in the services business? Okay, about half of you. How many of you are actually in the software business, like making stuff? Okay, a few of you, not as many. What do the rest of you guys do? Anyway, it's okay. So I think, you know, it doesn't matter what business that you're in. I want you guys to kind of think about, it really doesn't matter. You're in a service or software, or you're making product and consumer or clean tech. You start with, you know, making things. And I think, you know, Gary, you at the very beginning, when you actually make the product, doing the prototype, you don't necessarily make it yourself. And you can actually have help through ODES. You can actually ask them to help you to build it. You start with that, right? So the engineering part of it. After you're done with making, then what do you need to do? You need to market it. You need to build partnership. You need to sell it. And after you sell, you need to deliver it. And after you're done delivering, you need to do customer service. And I kind of always talk about it because I want to kind of frame things into perspective. Doesn't matter what business that you're in. everybody need to think about all these things as an entrepreneur. And in parallel, I like to kind of draw this picture. I should have it in a slide. Is you need to have finance support, legal support, IT support, and also human resource, right? And it does not matter what kind of business you're running. You have to think about all these things. So I think just throw it out there, because from this three amazing presentation, I haven't heard too much about kind of the IT or let's say finance. What do you guys do with your finance? Because I hate math and I hate accounting and I hate doing my tax. So what do you guys do with that? How do you actually save money, your bottom line, with it, on the financial side of things?
Well, from my point of view, I think finance and legal is one of those counterintuitive things. You could hire a lawyer who's $500 an hour, who's just the best deal ever, over some clown who's $150 and makes mistakes. And I was talking with a colleague of mine in our EO group, and I said, he's like, oh, I have all these issues, and I don't know what's going on with finance. I'm like, you know, my finance woman, she's $125 an hour, but she cranks it. And you know what? Now I don't have a whole lot of need for her. Maybe I use her 10 hours a month. But when she's on it, I know it's right. I know the taxes are filed. I know there is no mistake, because I cannot afford to get a boomerang come back at me and have someone screwed up. I'll give you one quick example. A lawyer we had from a big firm who charged a lot of money, he put in, he did our employment clause, and he forgot one little clause, which was if there's ever a legal dispute between us and an employee, he forgot the little phrase that, winner, loser pays both sides' legal fees. That was a huge mistake, because we got in a litigation with a terminated employee, and that alone, that little phrase, if they had done it right, would have saved us $200,000. So these are the type of things, I think, that legal, you got to know where your sandbox is, you got to know where your boundary is, and if you're not good at it, if your business isn't that complicated, just do QuickBooks Online. If you really hate it, Gary, I'm sure, has got tons of people who can help out.
Yeah, Gary?
Yeah, I would just reinforce what I said earlier, and I think it echoes what Mark was saying, which is hire the right resources at the right time. So the story that I'll tell is around legal as well. We use Fenwick & West for our counsel, and we have an attorney there that we absolutely love. But as Mark said, he's $500+ an hour. And we also do a lot of business development contracts. We're doing deals with Intuit and Salesforce.com and Amazon Web Services. And you know what? I don't need my general counsel to handle these business development contracts. We found a woman in our network. She's $125 an hour. She graduated from Boston College. She's a rock star attorney for $125, who happens to be a stay-at-home mom who is never going to make partner, right? She's about her kids, but she'd love to work 20, 30 hours a week from her den, right? And so we use Nicole just for our biz dev contracts. Maybe it's 4 or 5 hours a week. Everybody wins, right? So Fenwick for the important stuff, Nicole, less important stuff. So the way I'd approach this is say, is the decision reversible, right? Well, for your employee contract, no. You mess up there, it's a big cost, right? Is the decision reversible? If you mess up on one business development deal with a smaller partner, it's not the end of the world, right? So you want to look at all your decisions, flip a coin, right? Because your chances are you get half right, half wrong. You don't want to do that if it's irreversible. You do if it's reversible, then you can hire a different resource to help you there. So I would still say hire the right people at the right time. You don't need a full-time attorney for very early stage company, but you do have to get certain things right. Your patent, your employee contract, your IP. Don't mess around with that stuff.
Prior to my current business, I had a couple of angel-funded internet startups. And so with those businesses, with one of them we used Auric, and they were able to set up a program for us through the Emerging Technologies Department, where we gave them stock for our first like $10,000 of services with them. And then on round two of funding, then we would pay it back. With my current business, what I do is I barter. So I know it's kind of an old-fashioned thing to do, but everybody needs Facebook help, and it's a really great place for lawyers and for tax accountants to be. So I've given advice to both parties in exchange for Facebook information.
So a quick question on this. I know that, as we outsource more, and talking to, doesn't matter how much that you're paying, $500 or $125, like what would you guys advise in terms of interviewing the right people? Because most of the time, you don't see their face. And maybe like start with Gary, like how do you actually ask the right questions, maybe references, or like what do you do just to make sure that cheap is one thing, but make sure it's high quality?
Well, I think it starts with, I'm going to answer that question. First, I'm going to answer a different question, which is you have to be really clear about what it is you want. So what is it that you need done? When do you need it done by? And who are the people that have done that before or doing that for you today? And what are the characteristics of them? What are they doing well, right? So again, to echo what Mark said, you have to have relationships. You have to be able to talk to a network of advisors and people who have done this before. We're doing a lot of stuff around fraud prevention. We're not going to figure it out on our own. We're going to go build a network of people who have already done that, right? So the second point, how do you actually interview? How do you get the right candidate? So first, it's having a clear idea of what it is that you want. My hiring philosophy boils down to four things: personal characteristics, motivation, skills, and knowledge. Right. So draw a little pyramid. Put personal characteristics at the top, motivation below, skills on the left, knowledge on the right. What's the most important thing in that triangle? I heard it, personal characteristics, right? So personal characteristics are things that you can't change about somebody, right? So if you don't hire the right person in the first place, you're not going to be able to change those. So your questions have to be around what are the things that are important to you? Integrity, smart, creative, whatever it is. It's not the skill. They have to have a certain level of skill. You're not going to go out and hire somebody as an accountant who's a chef, right? You need somebody with accounting skills, but the most important thing are the personal characteristics. The second is the motivation. And so you've got to ask questions that are going to uncover, do they have the personal characteristics that are important to you? Do they have the motivation? And then the skills, right? Have they been an accountant? Have they sold before? Have they been in customer service? And then the knowledge. Have they been in customer service in your domain, right? Customer service for support. And that to me, if you hire somebody that's smart and creative and hardworking and motivated, right, then it's easier to teach those things. I had a boss once that said, you can teach a chicken to climb a tree, but you're better off getting a squirrel in the first place. And so
I love it.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying, Gary. And, you know, it's kind of a Jim Collinsism. You know, not only do you need the right people on the bus, you need the right people in the right seats on the bus. And all of us are busy. And most of the entrepreneurs I know hate hiring. They're terrified of it. Because, you know, if you screw up, you get a bad case of, you know, all sorts of things. And the fact of the matter is most companies turn over 20% of their employees a year, which means you're going to screw up quite a bit. So one thing that we did that I found very valuable and I'm using now in my coaching practice is...
Fake employees.
Fake lawyer.
And the great thing about fake employees, you can fire them, then rehire them, and... No one, you know, they're cool with it.
You better hope they don't see that clause in the contract, though, Mark, because then you're really screwed.
But seriously, one of my biggest challenges in running my three companies, and especially out here, and especially in technology, is hiring salespeople. In my experience, salespeople are awesome at selling themselves. Right? How many of you have ever hired a salesperson who's like, I've got the most awesome Rolodex, and we're going to take this to the moon? Has anyone ever heard of that before? How many people have said, what are you going to do when your cash register just can't hold all this money? But I've yet to meet the salesperson who says, you know what, if I underperform, is it okay if I return 20% of my salary? I just haven't met that person. So what we did religiously is we did testing, objective testing. So, for example, there are a whole bunch of things out there like Myers-Briggs, DISCs, blah, blah, blah. So we gave a test that was a hybrid of the DISC type profile showed what people's personality traits were and what their motivations were. And it would cost us $150 a head. And at least, and first of all, we benchmarked our own team, our own management. We said, okay, these are the core values. This is what's important to us. We're an online ad sales company. That's going to be different than if we're selling, you know, auto parts. So we knew what our profile was. We created a profile in every potential recruit we had take an assessment. So we'd get an objective thing back, say, hey, this guy's going to be a sales guy, but guess what? He's very low on the
on the D side of the disc. He's not very aggressive. So we know by experience that that guy isn't going to be doesn't have the likelihood of being successful. So number one, we get that, we weed out the outliers immediately, and then go through all the process of, you know, we went through meeting people and vetting them. And of course, no one shows up, you know, at an interview breathing fire, so it's hard to tell like who the bad people are. But another thing that a really good sales coach, Jack Daly, once said, he's like, people most often have it wrong. They hire quickly and they fire slowly. It should be the other way around. You should hire slowly and fire quickly, because the longest time in a manager's life is the time between when you know that person's a turkey and the time you put them on the Thanksgiving platter. And for whatever reason, a lot of CEOs or employees, like, they'll come around. You know, they're having a bad day. I've heard excuse after excuse after excuse while people continue to pay losers who are sapping your company of resources. But worst of all, if you have a bad apple in there and they continue to rot and worms are coming out of them, your company is screwed. And I had that situation once. I had an entire sales team take off, you know, and go across the street and try and burn us down. And that was a really terrible, painful experience. But guess what? We got sold to AOL and they didn't. So, but you know what? I could have saved a lot of headache if I'd really paid attention to, first of all, what was going on in there. If I'd paid attention, we were getting the right people on the bus and made sure all of our values were aligned. And even with doing all those things, you're going to make mistakes. But if you don't do those things, you're just playing Russian roulette. You know, you let someone into your company, and you are potentially looking at a huge liability. You know, legal, performance, all sorts of things can happen today. So I'd strenuously recommend that if you're not doing some sort of objective testing, you find someone to help you do that. It's another thing to help you.
Hazel.
So I like to kind of let people interview themselves. I have a very small shop. It's me and four part-time people. So I don't have a whole lot of time to deal with interviewing people. So what we usually do is we will post extremely detailed job descriptions that have very specific requirements. And one of the requirements is that people have to submit a Facebook page that they have developed in order for us to actually return their call, right? So of all the people who end up writing me back, I've been a web developer for 10 years or whatever, we'll usually get like one or two people who actually develop a Facebook page and submit it. And therefore, they passed round one, and we'll talk about round two. Round two for those people is a 90-day trial period where we bring them on as a contractor, and they can develop more Facebook pages for us, and you know, we'll see how things go from there. But as far as hiring people go, I would never hire anybody without putting them through a subcontractor trial period first. And so far, that's worked out for us pretty well as far as finding really high-quality workers. My first person who worked for me during my trial period now works at Facebook doing the same thing, developing pages for their high-end clients. So we've got pretty good people working for us.
And Gary has some.
Just to reinforce, try before you buy, right? And seven references for every employee, right? So the best seven. Yeah, and that's all your work should be talking to other people about, and it's the back channels, because that's where you're going to learn really about a candidate. It's not from the candidate.
Yeah. So, Gary, I actually have the question that related to what Mark was saying, and I know you have a lot of sales experience. Instead of talking about the rotten apple, how do you actually correctly motivate? I was talking to somebody earlier. You were looking at a highly motivated, great salesperson, but right now a lot of people are very tight with the budget. Like, how do you actually position the compensation correctly and actually pick out the good apple and motivate them correctly? What do you guys think?
Well, with salespeople, it's tough because the guy that may come across as the good salesman is probably too slick, and the guy that comes across as the not great salesperson is maybe too technical. And the right balance may be somewhere in between, right? And so I think it's a really hard thing to hire for. Yeah. There's two questions there. One, how do you identify good salespeople? And there I think it's looking at what do salespeople actually do, right? There's a lot that they do, and you have to look at what you actually need, because I know a company right now that needs closers. They have lots of opportunities in their pipeline. They're big strategic deals. They need somebody that knows how to navigate – a large organization and close those big deals. They don't need somebody who's good at banging on the phones and finding opportunities. Most companies, I think, today do need that. They need people that are good at finding and identifying opportunities. I was hiring a salesperson a few years ago. It was an ex-Siebel guy, and he said, hey, if you give me 100 leads, I'll close 90 of them. And I said, if I had 100 leads, I wouldn't need you, right? I need somebody who can go get 100 leads, right? And so you have to be clear again. You have to have your spec. You have to know exactly what it is you want, and then you have to find somebody with the right personal characteristics. I shouldn't have to motivate them. I want somebody who's motivatable. I don't know if that's a word, but the ability to get motivated, right? They want to get themselves out of bed in the morning. And, you know, along the lines of comp, the right guy for a startup, right? If you look at compensation, there's three components. There's base salary, there's bonus, and there's equity. And if you have to go and convince somebody to join your startup, and they're talking to you about how much comp they want and how much base they need, and people need a certain amount of base to support their lifestyle, if that's a red light and you can't get over that, you got to go to the next guy. You want the person that's willing to take the risk, wants skin in the game, and yeah, it might cost you a little bit of equity, but guess what? If that salesperson doesn't work out, you're keeping your equity because it's got a one-year cliff and 4 years of vesting, right? And so you can afford to give up more of your company because if they do perform, you're going to be worth more. If they don't, you're not really out the stock anyway because you're going to fix the problem before the turkey dinner with the worm and the apple, whatever, before you eat, right? So I think it's making sure you know what you want. It's identifying the right personal characteristics is still important. And then testing their motivation. You shouldn't have to bend over backwards to, you know, pay somebody a boatload of money. That the good salespeople are going to want upside, right? Because more at risk means a dollar is worth $1.50 if they perform, right? So putting more out there for overperformance and equity.
And I think accountability and trackability is absolutely vital. I mean, there's people who just, you know, I had an argument with a VP of sales. We had a guy who was actually a friend of mine who I hired, like what Gary's saying, very technical, very knowledgeable in the space. The guy couldn't close to save his life. And he had been in 3 months, and all our other guys were like, you know, at plan, above plan, and this guy was at like 5%. And my VP of sales was like, oh, I know I can do it. I know I can get him up to speed. I'm like, if you spent the energy you're spending on this guy really motivating the guys who are doing well, we'd have a lot more revenue. So I think, you know, you got to be really clear about what it is. What defines success? What defines failure? And make that really clear to the salesperson at the outset. You're like, you know what? Your goal is to bring us $200,000 of business by the end of Q2. Are we cool with that? Yeah, okay. It's like Oracle, right? Doesn't Oracle make you sign your resignation letter before? You know, yeah. If you miss your number at Oracle, you don't show up. You know what the drill is. And I think, you know, ambiguity is the biggest enemy, number one. Number two, testing, testing, testing. I mean, he said it again. These guys are really slippery. And it's hard to read people. We're not, you know, psychologists or HR geniuses. We're going to make mistakes. You got to get the odds in your favor. You know, you can't be playing blackjack with salespeople. Then another thing, I'm amazed to see CEOs who are like, you know, with this plan, this guy's going to make more than me. And my answer to that is like, hurt you with the problem. You know, what's your problem? Your cash drawer isn't that big. If this guy is killing it, like all my top sales guys made a lot more than me because the VC said, you're not making more than, you know, whatever. And, you know, I had sales guys making double what I made. And every time I wrote a check, I had a big smile on my face because they're killing it. For every dollar of revenue, they're adding $5 of value to the business. So from a sales plan perspective, again, you know, if you got a guy who comes in and is like, you know, in his negotiations talking about if he's going to have a parking space or not, you got the wrong guy. If you have, and I did have a guy like that once, actually. And, but, you know, you got to be fair. I've seen a lot of startups that these guys think that, you know, someone's going to the gulag and they're going to work, you know, 12 hours a day for free. I mean, that's not reasonable. The way we structured our plans is we were like, okay, from dollar one, we're going to compensate you. And guess what? Your percentage is going to be pretty crappy up until about 50%. And then, you know, all our people, and again, this is online advertising, their comp went up to 10% at 100% of plan. At 110% of plan, it went to 12%. At 125%, they were at 15%. Someone's like, you're going to pay the guy 15%? I'm like, at 115%, that's pure incremental profit dollars. Hurt me with the problem. And so many entrepreneurs don't think like that. So, you know, again, you got to sell the sales guy. Hey, you're going to kill it? Well, guess what? At plan, your package is worth $250. You may be getting a 65 base, but do you believe that you're going to make it at plan? And if the guy believes, he is there. If he's hemming and hawing about, oh, my expenses, guess what? He don't believe he can make the number. Hello? You know, that sort of...
Hurt him with the problem?
Yeah. Hurt you. You don't want to get hurt with the problem. So that's the type of thing I think, you know, that's a little bit of common sense. But, you know, if you, you know, I hired a guy who did our comp plans, and it was really good, and it was worth every penny. And if you haven't had that guy, you know, find a good guy or you know, talk to people who've done it before. But I don't be afraid of overcompensating for performance. Be totally afraid of overpaying for a resume. Because, unfortunately, we're all competing with who? Google, Yahoo. A few years ago, if a guy had a pulse and been in the business for 3 years, someone would throw $150,000 at him, regardless. You know, now it's a little bit tougher, but it's tough.
I got to say, I really love what Mark is saying about being really generous when you do find the right people. So do you all know that expression, a little bit of something is a whole lot better than all of nothing? That certainly rings true in business, especially for us entrepreneurs. And I also just want to make a comment that will probably make you totally cringe, Greg. So when it comes to bringing people on, I actually don't check any references. And my reason for that is because I can easily find you guys, 20 of my friends or people I've worked with or worked for, who really like me a lot as a person and would be willing to tell you that I'm really great at making shoes. I don't know how to make shoes. You know, so I think it's pretty easy for a lot of people, especially with sales personalities like I have, to find somebody to say whatever they want them to. So what I do is I internet stalk them. I become their friend on Facebook. I check out what they're doing on Twitter. And in what I'm doing, that's obviously extremely relevant. I want somebody who knows how to use all of these tools. So I go online and Google them and check out everything that they're doing on all the social networks. And that, for me, is their reference.
Yeah, so it definitely doesn't make me cringe. I think it's your paradigm, right? You're in a business where it's about online, right? And so I agree that online you can find out a lot about people. For the entrepreneurs in the room that aren't about you know, social media or everything online, you absolutely, you know, my recommendation still is you check references. I would also check online. You can find out a lot.
Yeah, and last, just one point I want to add is that, you know, doesn't, again, as I said, it doesn't matter your services business or software business. Your friends who are your entrepreneur friends are going through the same problem you have. And don't feel like you're in this alone. Ask around. Ask for, like, the best salesperson, the best lawyer that your friends or successful entrepreneur have used before. Why, you know, spend all this time to find a special someone, and if this person that your friends or this great person already have great experience with them, that really can, you know, shortcut and, you know, save a lot of time.
And one more thing I'd say, I think it's the early hires of a small company are disproportionately more important than they are at a later stage. If you're 50 people and you hire a couple people, yeah, doesn't really matter. If you're 3 people and you're going to bring someone on, that's a quarter of your team. And the way I talk about it, I have a client now, and they're growing. They want to double this year. They're a manufacturing company. They want to get into social media. So. And I said to the guy, I'm like, you know, you guys are 8 people. You're with each other all the time. Think about it like you're inviting someone to dinner who's going to be at your table for, like, forever. You know, do you want to have dinner with that, breakfast, lunch, and dinner with that person? You know, as a small company, it's incredibly important that you don't hire wrong. You know, you can hire almost right or, you know, kind of right, but if you hire wrong, you're screwed. You've got a rat on the ship, and getting that rat off the ship can be really hard and really painful. I mean, seriously, I can't, you know, I've seen a lot of ugly stuff go down with, you know, with fellow EO members and, you know, friends and other stuff, and you just can't afford that. So, you know, whatever your paradigm, you know, just be, you know, hire slowly, fire quickly. That's, I think, really important.
So we talk about a lot of rats and apples and stuff like that. I actually want to open up the floor for anyone who would like to ask questions, and please go up to the right-hand side, and so we can actually, please do, so we can, everybody can hear your questions, and please tell us your name, your company, and your question that you have for our panelists.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kunal, and I'm at a very early stage building a prototype. And first off, pretty good presentation. I really like, very informative. My question is, how do you actually choose your partners? Because I think employees come later. I think it's even more valuable to pick whom do you partner with and what criteria do you choose and what have you guys used to do that?
So when you say partners, you mean?
The founding partners.
Co-founder.
Yeah, co-founders that'll bring in some expertise.
So finding a business partner is like finding a life partner. It's like marriage. You spend all of your time with that person. It's absolutely incredibly difficult to find the right business partner. I've worked with a lot of people on a lot of projects at this point, and I've worked with a lot of really great people, talented people, really smart people, and people whom were successful outside of the businesses we worked on together, and I've been successful without them. But sometimes, just like in marriage, it's not the right fit, and I wish I could answer your question better, but for me, I haven't found the right partner. I've tried out all different people. One thing that I did find, that I do find, though, has worked best for me is finding somebody who has complementary skills rather than finding somebody who's just like you.
Yeah, I'm not a believer in partners. So, I mean, there's got to be a really compelling reason to have a partner. You know, I mean, if you're like, well, you know, this guy's going to bring me this amount of money, you know, rule number five on my presentation, go find it from your customers. You know, if the person, you know, if you guys, you know, were struggling together in the dorm and you built it together and, you know, you guys are running the race neck and neck, that's a different story. But I think it's very hard to find something equitable. I mean, I was doing a kind of a fun startup, you know, with a buddy of mine, a guy I knew pretty well. And, you know, our definitions of work were very different. You know, our definitions of what we were doing with our time was very different. And I, you know, a little bit of a type A, high D for my, you know, for my personality test. I'm like doing it. And this guy was like so mellow. Great guy. But, you know, it wasn't complimentary. And so luckily we both were like, well, you know, we have different goals. We're going to do something else. But if you're in it, and all of a sudden you figure out that, hey, you know, this person wants to go to Tahoe every Thursday afternoon and they're coming back, you know, Monday afternoon and you're busting your hump, you know, that's not going to last very long. You're going to get pissed and things are going to get ugly. So I don't think there's any reason to look for a partner.
So
Gary.
So I'm going to take a different view on this and say, you know, define partner. Odesk is 25 employees. They're all my partners. Right. And so, Hazel, you said it's you and four partners. Just because they're a partner doesn't mean they're in for half your business. So I'll go back to my first point about hiring. What is it that you need? Right. Do you need a partner or do you need a technologist or do you need a marketer or what is it? And then what you call them is kind of up to you. But you still need to get the right personal characteristics, the right motivation, the right skills and knowledge for what you need today. A recruiter I know is doing a search for a very well-known company for a VP of engineering. And he said, hey, do you have any good referrals for me? You know who I could hire for this? And I said, well, you know, I know somebody who'd probably be good today, but I don't think he could scale with the company 2 years from now. He said, that's perfect. They only want somebody for a year, right? And so this very large, well-known company only wanted somebody for a year. They said, we need somebody that can get us from here to there. We're going to need somebody else that can get us from there to there. And this was a $100 million plus revenue business, and I was shocked that they only wanted somebody for that short-term horizon, right? And so that's just a perfect example of getting what you need at the right time, and then see rule number one.
And let me just add to the partner and broaden that a little bit, talking about biz dev partners. You know, and I know it's really popular in the Valley for everyone to partner, you know. And, you know, again, I've made that mistake too. How many logos can I have on my site? And, you know, what you really need is, you know, the OT test. You want to search and destroy the oxygen thieves, the people whose only job is to waste your time. And so, you know, part of what we did at Game Daily, I mean, we built the first vertically integrated ad network aimed at gamers, aimed at young males. We were really early, and we had all these partners. And pretty, you know, we had one partner who was a really big brand, incredibly well-known company. And these guys were not giving us a lot of traffic. They were not living up to their side of the bargain in terms of, you know, placement on their site. They weren't generating a lot of revenue. And
the person in charge of that account would call our person and just bust his hump all day long. And finally, I called her up. I said, "You're fired." She said, "What do you mean? I'm your partner." I said, "Not anymore, you're not." Because, you know, the thing is, I think a lot of people spend a lot of time looking for people. You know, it's kind of like Facebook. You want people to like you. Well, business isn't about being liked. You know, business is about what are your goals. And most people don't even know what their goals are. So everyone here who has a business should know, these are my top three goals. And if you don't know them, you better think about them and write them down. My former partner, who was a great guy, this is a Swiss guy, he has a really cool company now called Kunaki, which does on-demand DVDs. Really awesome, high-value DVDs. And he has a part on his site. It's like, if you want to partner with us, don't call us. Don't email with us. We don't care what you want to do. Here's our service. It costs $1.50 per DVD. Do whatever you want with our service. Just don't contact us. And on his thing, he's like, we don't care what your business is.
You know. Real people.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he's
Bruce Lee.
He was Bruce Lee's alter ego. So he's a Swiss guy. So if any of you have been over to the German speaking world, you kind of get that. But in any case, you know, he was kind of blunt. But I think his point is really good. He's like, this is our sandbox. My job is making a great service. You want to use my service. Here's my handoff. It's crystal clear. Here's my API. Okay? You want to build to that API? God bless you. You know, Facebook did it. You look at really great companies, they're very clear on where their boundaries are. And I think the partnering thing about being loosey-goosey and where's our boundaries, you know, especially for small companies, I think is a big trap that everyone can feel like, well, we want everyone to like us, we want to partner with all these people, and that's really good. And I've seen lots of biz dev guys running all day long, meetings, and they don't generate any revenue. I'm a CEO, and I want you to bring in revenue. I don't care how many meetings or lattes you're having with these guys. Bring in revenue. So again, it gets back to your goals. What are your goals? What do you want your company to do? And maybe your business, you're a Sun or you're an Oracle, and you live on reseller channels. So of course you got to have partners. But if you're like an app, a web app, where everyone finds everything, why do you have to talk to anybody? Again, that's his philosophy, but I believe it.
Thank you, guys.
So thank you so much for your questions. We are on the dot, 8:30. I'm usually known for being on time. So I'm going to open up for one last questions because we didn't get a whole lot of chance for people to ask questions. Anybody want to ask one last question? So why don't you go over there, tell us your name, your company, and your question, final question.
Hey, it'll be quick. My name is Kai Mitsushu. I'm doing marketing for a startup called OneSimpleMove.com. We're up in North Beach. But my question is actually about a different project that I'm working on with a friend. And it's a little bit towards Gary's kind of specific about at Odesk, you're talking about leveraging the global marketplace with the global talent. And obviously, business language of business is English, but have you dealt with issues of communication or cultural differences, and how is Odesk trying to solve those problems?
Yeah, so absolutely, right? And my favorite story here is a friend was hired a virtual assistant, and it was somebody in India who was going to help him out, and he was traveling from the Bay Area to New York, and he said, could you print out my itinerary? Can you send me all the documents I'm going to need? I want you to, organize my packet for travel. And one of the things he had asked for was directions from the office to the hotel. And so he got to New York, and he was at the office. He says, okay, now let me look for my directions from the office to the hotel. And it said, okay, get on I-80 West, drive 3,000 miles to the Marriott, right? So there's this contextual information that was missing because the person in India had no idea. She thought, he meant his local Bay Area office. He was talking about the New York office, right? And so those sometimes things just don't translate. And so there's challenges with that. And I think, the good news about tapping into a global marketplace is that people can make choices. You can make a choice, on Odesk, for example, you could say, hey, I only want to deal with onshore or nearshore. We can give you data that says, hey, offshore could be about a third of the cost. You as a buyer now can make a good decision. You could say, I'm willing to take some of these potential communication challenges, but I'm going to interview exceptionally hard up front and make sure I'm clear about what I want. Maybe your qualifications are that they work your time, not their time, right? So you say, I'm willing to hire you, but you have to work when I'm working, not follow the sun. So, but I think that's a happy to talk to you afterwards. There's a lot of challenges with global communication.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your question. And let's give our panelists a great round of applause. So this tonight is not, we're not done yet. Because our panelists actually gave us a few really, really cool gifts. So I do want to actually talk about them. And so my team don't actually kill me, that I always forget. But while Andre is running for that piece of paper, I always forget, and I want you guys to know that put together these kind of event is a lot of work. And usually every month that we do once a month this kind of meetup, I always wake up in the morning thinking, man, what if there's nobody show up? I always think that this little butterfly in my stomach, all this work that we put together, if there's nobody show up, like that would really suck. But anyway, but you know, it always is great people here, but I want to recognize quite a few people who actually helped to make this happen. And Tim Wagner, which is the best photographer that I know, and actually in the world, for me at least. He traveled around the world to take pictures of Olympics, and if you go to his website, is what is it again? TWagnerImages.com. He's just amazing, and that's why he's here. And usually, you know, he's like spending time with all these celebrities somewhere around the world, and he just happened to be here. So let's actually give him a round of applause, because Tim basically is our SF entrepreneur, really the only photographer that I want to be here. And second is Andre, who is wearing the BizTech Rockstar T-shirt at the back. Andre setting up everything you see here, including this trailer, the music, all the camera, there's three of them here, and all these things is because Andre coordinated with, where's Matt? Matt, say hi to Matt, who's also helping. And where's Jeannie? Jeannie, who's wearing gold back there. She's one of the angels, and she's just amazing. And Jeannie, actually, originally from, she's just amazing background, from South Africa. And it's amazing. Everybody who's on our team is very, very international. And that's why we are having at least 10 cities that will be broadcasting BizTech. It's just all about these amazing people. A couple other people I want to recognize is Rebecca and Matt, who are sitting in the middle. Let's wave your hand. So tonight, Rebecca and Matt was going to help us to take a little bit of using the flip video to take some of your tips on the cheap ideas, because we talk about a whole bunch of them, but I know that you're dying to tell us like you just one idea, this secret that we just didn't talk about. So make sure that you got yourself on camera. We'll put it on YouTube so you can also share with the community. A couple other people that I want to recognize is Dawn and Eileen, who is helping us with registration, who is still sitting out there. So I actually want all of you guys to harass them before you go and say, hey, thank you so much for your help and making this happen. We definitely cannot do this without you. And last but not least, and is Kurt. Where is Kurt? Somewhere, who's our camera. Hey, oh, hey. I'm like always looking in the dark. Kurt, who's sitting right in front of, been sitting here for 2 hours, taking all these great content for us. And so let's give everyone a round of applause. Okay, so now done with thanking people, where is that piece of paper that I'm actually supposed to talk about? So a great panelist here actually have donate some really, really cool gift for us. For people who are registered for BizTech Day tonight, there's a whole bunch of cool bonuses, and I'm actually going to kind of list them. You have this piece of paper here. So let's start with, I have to talk about this one thing I don't want to forget. Next month, we are meeting at a different spot at the Roll Lounge restaurant place. It's also another cool place, and it's going to go with our Cool Women, Cool Brand event on May 27th. And it's going to be in the evening. And I'm very, very excited because we have three amazing women who are coming. First is the let's start with the one that I'm really impressed with their airline, is the Vice President of Marketing, I'm missing the word marketing, of Virgin America. And her name is Portugal. And Portugal will be coming to speak along with the co-founder of Squidoo, Megan Casey, a friend of mine, and also the founder of Ning, Gina Bianchi. Am I saying her name correct? So these cool women will be speaking at Roll. We are, so for anyone who signed up for BizTech tonight, you actually get 4 complimentary passes to Cool Women Cool Brand that are worth $100, and is also open for men. So even that you're not a woman, it's okay. You can still come and bring all your cool women friend to Roll. The second thing is thanks to Hazel Grace that we will have, whoever that signed up tonight will have private access to Social V Buzz Resource Network, which is actually created on Ning. And for 1 year, and value is $108. And Hazel want to make sure that you guys know is in alpha mode right now, but it's definitely will be official very, very soon, so you definitely want to get signed up for that. And there's she will be answering a lot of like questions that you learned tonight with Facebook, but there's so much to learn. So you can actually post your question, and she will be helping to answer on this network that she just set up for us. And the third thing is Mark actually have a exclusive site, which is markfrieda.blogspot.com, that she actually usually only open up to his private client, and now it's going to also open up for people who tonight can sign up for BizTech. And Gary, I know Gary have one certificate for us, so I think probably half an hour from now, after people do sign up, we will draw one person who signed up and actually have a $100 gift certificate to use ODES. So you learn all these things about outsourcing, hiring the right people, ask the right question, checking references. You can actually have a little credit on ODES and use it and try it out yourself. And so you can actually hire a couple of people just for testing purposes.
Edith, we had so much fun tonight. Why don't we do $200? So why don't we
auction
off two?
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Gary. And also, last but not least, we have only 20, by the way, all these stuff, is only 25 of these that we have. So if you guys do sign up tonight, you will also go away with this one with Tim Ferriss' face on it, who loved the whole idea of outsourcing. And there's about 12 hours of content on this DVD, but really is audio. So you will actually bring this home with you as well. So with all this said, I really, really, really want to thank everyone. And what we're going to do now is this event is not over yet because the bar is still open and it will be open till 10. And what I'm going to do is that I know a lot of you are thirsty because I'm dying of thirst. So I really need a drink and I have not been drinking for the last 3 hours. So I'm going to go grab a drink and I'm going to stick around. And at the same time, probably about 10 minutes from now, I know a lot of you do want to kind of tell everyone about, you know, your stuff. So why don't we take a 10-minute break, come back here, and you know whoever wants to kind of line up, just hold a mic for 90 seconds, and we will time you so you don't tell all these crazy, rotten rats and all these stories. Really, just like precise on all your on-the-cheap idea that you want to share. So come back, let's go grab a drink, and come back here, and then we'll share more. Thank you, everyone. And if you guys do want to find out about BizTech Day and all these cool stuff, there's a table at the back, and Matt is waving back there and getting you guys to come. You can go ask him and ask for the details about BizTech.